Doug.
And I'm Sue.
And this is Life, Death and Sex.
With Mike and Sue.
And welcome to the show that's all about life, families and relationships.
But first, have you been the innocent victim of credit card fraud? If so, Gino and Ricky Medici would like to hear from you. Phone them, leaving your credit card number, expiry date and the frequency with which you check your statements.
And why are A-levels getting easier? We talk to the man who sets the questions, David Beckham. But now, on to our first topic today, growing up and aging. The aging population is already affecting the job market. Employers are turning more and more to older people.
Yes, but it does just seem to be mainly older men who are getting the jobs.
Yes, yes, I suppose that's true. Well, that's certainly what happens in our game.
What do you mean?
Well, if you think of TV and radio presenters, well, look at Parkinson. One of the best paid men on television, and, well, he's what? Must be in his 60s. David Frost, Michael Aspel, Des Lynam, all older men.
Well, yeah, but...
And look at the girls. Anna Ford... She's been demoted to the lunchtime news. Sue Lawley, she's about to drop off the end of the pier. No, it's all looking rosy for me. But you, Sue, well, you've got another 5 years, and then it's off to the glue factory.
Fish, Mike. I mean, what about Gloria Hunniford?
4 words, Sue. Channel 5, mid-afternoon. Well, one group who are going to be more concerned than most with an aging population are advertisers. And here to tell us all about it is advertising supremo, Peter Kent.
It's pronounced Kent.
Now, Peter, what's this adverts for old people thing really all about? Hmm?
Well, as a very TV-literate population gets older, advertisers are going to have to learn to treat them in a more sophisticated manner.
A sort of rebranding?
No. No, that's something different. Here's what adverts aimed at old people are like at the moment.
Hi, I'm a former Blue Peter presenter. One day, you're going to die. That's right, die. And it could be sooner than you think. With our insurance policies, no medical required, you could get enough to cover your funeral expenses with a bit left over to buy some biscuits. Order within 7 days and get these complimentary paper clips absolutely free.
Well, that is terrible, isn't it? I mean, what are they selling?
No, that's not the problem. The problem is it's old-fashioned. It's out of date. If you want to sell to today's 70-year-olds, you're going to have to use a bit more style.
Oh, I see. A sort of a product differentiation.
No. Here's an advert my agency's just completed for an upcoming campaign.
When you're old and angry.
So, you're over 70. You're not confident driving your car. How are you going to carry your shopping home now? A shopping trolley, that's how. Look at it. Tartan, two wheels, large flap. Think of the biscuits you'll be able to force into this baby. The new Doc Martin shopping trolley. Push it, pull it, stand it up in the hall, lean it against a tree. It's your call. It's a trolley and it's tartan. You know you want it.
So it's an advert for a product.
Yes. That's right, Mike. Yes, and we're going to be seeing more and more adverts like that as the baby boomer generation get older and older. And for instance, in years to come, you might have Keanu Reeves advertising Zimmer frames, or you could see a picture of Kate Moss lying on the kitchen floor advertising granny alarms.
Or Thora Heard advertising Tango.
No, I don't see how that would work.
Well, of course, yes. So in a way, you're trying to alter the demographic profile.
No. That's the whole point. We're not trying to alter it. If anything, we're trying to catch up with the demographic profile. I mean, the older now, the important consumers. It's up to us to respond.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I was just meaning to sort of flag it up a bit.
Mike, I don't mean to be rude, and thanks for having me on the show, but it's as if you've just got hold of a few buzzwords that you don't really understand, and you're just throwing them into the conversation to make yourself sound intelligent.
No, actually, you're wrong. They're not my buzzwords. They're the producer's. He wrote them down on cards for me.
All right.
Thank you, Peter Kent.
It's Kent.
Sue, what have you got for us?
Well, Oh, actually, Mike, I thought this might be a good opportunity for you to tell everyone at home about the incident you were involved in last Thursday.
Haven't we got an item on middle age now?
Oh, I think we've got a couple of minutes. So how did the fight start?
Well, since Sue has brought it up, perhaps this is a good time to set the record straight. A lot of you will have read in some of the sleazier tabloids about an alleged incident, fight, if you will, involving myself. Firstly, I'd like to apologise if I've caused distress to any of you, my fans.
Come on, tell everyone what happened.
Well, Richard Whiteley and Tim Brooke Taylor and I were having a lad's night out on the town.
Oh, I didn't know you knew Richard and Tim.
We were doing a corporate together. They were going for a drink and I asked if I could go along and they didn't say no. And anyway, we got to the Groucho. Tim and Richard went in. I was behind them for some reason and I got stopped by the doorman.
Well, why didn't they just sign you in?
Well, they were clearly in some sort of hurry. Anyway, I didn't have my membership card with me.
I didn't think you were a member.
As you know, Sue, I'm in the process of becoming a member. You were kind enough to vouch for me, eventually. Anyway, this doorman was very officious. Basically, I did not go berserk in some sort of drunken rage and push over a scooter. And I would also like to appeal for any witnesses to come forward, because the trial's on Monday. And without a witness, to be honest, it's not looking very clever.
Well, I'm sure we all wish you the very best, Mike, especially as we all know how damaging a conviction can be to a career in the media.
Thank you, Sue.
You're listening to Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue.
Well, we're looking at ageing. Now, probably the first time people start worrying about ageing is when they're about to enter middle age.
Are you a worried woman, Sue?
Not as worried as you are, Mike. Anyway, here's how they coped with middle age in the 1950s.
Hello. You're 28, and you've probably been noticing some changes in your body. Small wrinkles around the eyes, the occasional grey hair, and a tendency to find yourself standing bemused in a lion's corner house with no idea how you arrived there. Well, don't worry. You're simply becoming middle-aged. At the age of 28, you've probably been middle-aged for the last 3 years. Here is an ordinary couple, Kenneth and Audrey.
Hello.
Hello.
They're both 28. Audrey's in the kitchen.
That's right. I'm cooking a nice meal. Then we're going to eat it and go to bed. We did used to dine out and have friends, but not anymore.
Kenneth is doing some DIY.
Yes, I'm tearing out the fireplaces and other original features and replacing them with Formica, the material of the future.
So don't be frightened. Middle age happens to us all. And anyway, you've had a good run. So sit on the settee with your wife or husband, uncork the sherry, lie back and wait for the conversation to run out.
That was all a long time ago. So what about middle age now? To tell us her thoughts on the matter is controversial columnist and part-time lesbian Judy Churchill.
Hello, my lovely.
Hi there, Judy. Now, Judy, you've just written a book on middle age called Middle Youth. So what in a nutshell are you saying?
Well, what it is, right, is that, you know, people are generally, like, extending their youth and such? You know, like, mucking about and listening to records, like? Like, well into their 40s and such. So, they're being younger for a bigger age sort of thing.
Hmm. And is this based on your own experience?
Yeah, it sort of is, yeah. I mean, I'm in my 40s and I have a right laugh. Like, me and my mates, right, we go out clubbing till 6 in the morning all the time, like. And loads of people are doing it, you know. It's like a phenomenon or something.
But do people our age really do this sort of thing? I mean, I'm younger than you.
Never.
Well, actually, I am.
You never are.
Yes, I am. You can check on my website.
Well, why don't you just tell us how old you are?
Just check on the website. Anyway, I'm about the same age as you, and if I go out, it's, well, to a restaurant or the cinema.
Well, maybe you should go out clubbing a bit more, you know, while you still can.
What I'm saying is I don't want to go out clubbing, and I'm certain the same applies for most people our age.
Well, I know loads of other people out clubbing. It's not just me.
Well, who else?
Well, other columnists, like.
So, would it be fair to say this phenomenon you describe is just you and a few other journalists drinking rather heavily and staying up late?
Well, I expect there are some others, you know, actors, waiters, people who don't have to get up early. Weatherman.
So it's a well-researched piece of work, then?
Oh, yeah. I typed it out and everything.
Well, Judy's book, Middle Youth, is out next month, and if you can't wait until then, it's being serialised in Just 17.
No, it's in the Daily Mail.
Whatever. Well, thank you, Judy Churchill.
If I could just come in at this point. Judy, you go to the Groucho quite a lot. You wouldn't have happened to have seen my little fracas.
No, my lovely, I was there, but I was in the toilet at the time, you know. Powdering my nose, as they say.
Oh.
But Sue will have seen it. She was there that night, all right? Yeah, she was in the group that went onto the pavement and they were laughing and everything.
So, Sue, you were there and you didn't say anything.
Well, yes, that's right, Mike. But, you know, I'm not sure how good a witness someone of my age would be. You see, the old memory's going a bit, all a bit hazy.
Oh, I see.
Good. And we can discuss it all later. Well, it's time for this week's Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue, Good Cause.
Hello, I'm Michael Burke. And I'm here to talk to you about the very real problem of chefs who can't get on the telly. Did you know that in this country alone there are still 8 chefs who have yet to appear on national television? Through no fault of their own, they're normal. They can't drink 2 bottles of red wine and shout at the cameraman. They can't quote Tennyson whilst frying cod. And perhaps, most tragically of all, they can't slide down a banister and say pucker without laughing. We've got literally a huge task ahead of us, but with your help we can make a start. £50 could teach an ordinary chef to swear. £100 could buy him a stupid hat. And £250 could give him a behavioural disorder that one day could be worth millions. But perhaps you're thinking, why should I give money to help a normal chef become a character when I could use that money to buy food for Gail Porter? Well, here's what just a small grant did for James, a previously diligent and hygienic chef.
Watch your cocks! That's a big sausage! Whoa! That's a big carrot! Whoa! That's a big turnip! Whoa!
James now has his own series on Channel 4. And his book, Cooking with Innuendo, is at the top of the bestseller lists. So please, give whatever you can. A bow tie, a big spoon, or just some unusual spectacles. And together we can ensure food will always be cooked in an irritating manner.
But now on to our next topic, something that's very close to Mike's heart, not to mention his liver, alcohol.
Yes, that's right. Sue, I don't suppose you've had any luck remembering anything from Thursday night.
As Mike well knows, alcohol and drinking can wreck lives and careers.
Yes, yes indeed.
Well, in Britain today, we're drinking more and more wine, and people's palates are becoming increasingly sophisticated.
Indeed. Many people, myself included, have attended evening classes in drink appreciation.
Have you, Mike? I thought that was just you and a few blokes in a pub.
It was an evening class.
Baxter, you're late.
Oh, sorry, I got held up at work.
And why have you not done your homework?
What do you mean, sir?
Where's your hangover?
Well, they didn't have that pork you recommended in the off-licence, so...
Oh, sit down.
Oh,
right, we're talking about white wines. Julie, identify this wine for me, please.
Is it a Chardonnay?
It is a Chardonnay, and Chardonnay is...
A type of grape.
No, Chardonnay is what people from Essex drink. It's the new Liebfrau Milch. You can put someone down with that remark. Now, moving on. This is a Sauvignon Blanc. Baxter, taste it and give me your opinion.
It's full-bodied, lemony with just a hint of apple, and it's got a very clean finish.
Yes, very good, but what about the accent?
Sorry, it's full-bodied, lemony with just a hint of apple, and it's got a very clean finish.
And the laugh. Very high-handed, excellent. Now, Collins, what's that now?
Nothing, sir.
Nothing, sir? Bring it here. Come on. Oh, a bottle of mineral water, is it? Put it in the bin. Now.
Sorry, sir.
Stay where you are. What? That bell is a signal for me, not for you.
No.
I think I... Thank you. After that mineral water episode, I think a detention is called for, don't you?
No,
so listen, all I want you all now to get into pairs and practice spilling red wine on expensive Persian rugs. Oh, off you go.
Well, enjoying fine wines and whiskey is one positive side of drinking, but are there others? Well, one man who thinks so is Dr. Max Larch. Welcome, Max.
Hi there.
Hello. And can I say I really enjoyed your recent series of The History Kick?
You can indeed.
It's really good to see an academic on TV who takes an interest in his appearance.
Oh, cheers. Well, it's just a way of getting a message across to the kids, you know, and if wearing leather trousers helps, well, then it's got to be leather trousers.
And tight ones at that. Anyway, you, Max, have got a theory on alcohol and creativity, haven't you?
That's right, Sue. I throughout history, alcohol and creativity have been inextricably bound up with each other.
Go on.
Well, you know, let's look at just one example. Ernest Hemingway. His greatest work was done when he was drinking. For instance, you know that incredible first bullfighting scene in Death in the Afternoon?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's great.
Oh, it's more than great, Sue. Written those words is like having an icy finger run up your spine from the base of your back to the nape of your neck.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, he wrote that flat on his face in the urinals at Harry's Bar. Yes, sir. Yes, indeed. Alcohol opened the gateways to his mind. But here's an earlier draft of the same passage written when he was stone cold sober. His trousers are a bit tight. There you go. The bull came out. It was brown. It had horns. It was angry. It bumped over the man. It went moo.
Well, that's not as good, is it?
No, Sue. That's rubbish.
That's an amazing piece of material. You must have been researching really hard.
Oh, I like to be thorough. You know, I like to get into all the little nooks and crannies.
I bet you do.
And I also like to push an argument as far as it can go. Really, really stretch it.
I think that's probably all we've got time for just now, Max. But we must get you back on. Soon, to talk about all your other theories.
Aye, right enough. That'd be great, Sue.
Well, in fact, it might be a good idea for us to meet up soon to run over what you'd like to talk about.
I'm game on for that. Actually, there's a great little bistro I know in Fulham.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah. Yeah,
great. I'll come too.
No. I think it's probably best if it's just me and Max.
Why? It's my show too.
The time being.
Anyway, Sue, I'll give you a call about that.
Thank you, Dr. Max Larch.
What's that squeaking? What's that noise?
I think it's Max's leather trousers. Well, the place most alcohol is consumed is, of course, the pub. Now, pubs play a central part in British life, not to mention our soap operas. But how would the soaps survive without their pubs? Well, that's the challenge we put to the script-writing team of EastEnders.
Mum, Kev's busy today.
Hello, Phil. What are you having?
I'll have a large tea.
But I thought you were off the tea. I thought you'd finish with all that.
Oh, leave it alone. Give me a tea, a large one.
Hello, Peggy.
Hello, Mark. What are you having, love?
Chitlis, please.
Pint?
No, just a cup.
Yeah. Probably for the best.
Hello, Peggy.
Hello, Frank. Tea?
What's he doing in here?
Now, leave it, Phil.
No, I don't want any trouble, Phil. I just want a cup of tea.
Sorry, Frank. Tea's off. I'll have to change the urn.
Looks like you failed to get a cup of tea like you failed at everything else.
Just ignore him, Frank. It's the tea talking.
Listen, son. If you weren't so full of caffeine and I wasn't wearing Reactolite repeat glasses, I'd ask you to step outside.
Just go, Frank. Come on, go.
Well, you got a minute, Mum, and another cuppa and an espresso chaser.
Don't you think you've had enough, Phil?
I need it, Mark. I'm balding. I need it.
We're all balding, but you're not going to solve nothing by crawling into a teapot.
I'll leave it alone.
Hello, all. Oh, Philip, I see you're back on the tea.
What's it to you, Dot? More tea and leave the pot.
You know, you really should eat something, Philip. Here, munch on a hobnob.
Ooh! I do the innuendos, thank you very much.
Pardon me for breathing, I'm sure.
Cup of tea. Cup of tea, Doc.
No, you know I never touch this stuff. I'll just have a large Jack Daniels and Coke.
Do you know what, Sue? I think this actual bodily harm charge could be the best thing that's ever happened to me.
What?
It's taken the threat of the sack and the prospect of a massive fine to make me realise I've got to make changes.
Such as?
Well, I'm going to give up drinking, for one thing. And I'm going to get out of this whole media circus. You know, when I was at school, I used to love watching the Apollo missions. Sue, I'm going to be an astronaut.
Mike, look, sit down. It's fine. Look, I was there that night. I saw everything that happened. You were certainly drunk, but you didn't hit anyone.
Oh, thank God. Are you sure? I mean, it was all a bit blurry. I didn't know what I was doing.
Just don't worry, OK? You didn't do anything, and I'll say that in court.
Oh, brilliant. I don't know what to say.
Oh, just get on with it.
Of course. Oh, God. So, this is me, Mike, saying, what about the side effects of alcohol? Now, many of us know lots about drink, but what do we really know about the hangover? Here to tell us all about it is hangover connoisseur Roger Swan. Hello, Roger.
Hello, Mike.
Now, you've brought in quite a selection of drinks for us. Perhaps you could talk us through the sort of hangovers they'll induce.
Well, let's start off with something bog standard, a pint of lager. That's it, Mike, you get stuck in. Now, 8 pints of this will give you the classic hangover. Sweating, headache, lot of visits to the Kazi. Basically, you're a slab of meat sweating in the sun. But nothing a full English and a packet of Nurofen won't sort out.
Yes, Nurofen.
Now, let's try something a bit more tricky. Gin. That's it, Mike. You just try a bit of that one. Just roll it round your mouth and spit it into the bowl. You spit it in... Well, swallow it.
Yes, lovely. Yes.
Well, help you. Have some more.
Oh,
mm. Mind if I do?
I'm in a bloody good mood.
Now, a lot of people think this is a very depressing hangover, but for me, it's more shocking. You wake up, bolt upright in the bed, no idea where you are. Blimey, what happened? You know, strange person next to you. You rummage round for your clothes and then the slow gathering of your senses over the next 2 days. It's just magical.
Ah, I know the feeling well.
Now, this is a black Russian.
Vodka and Kahlua, isn't it?
That's right, Mike. And Kahlua is a coffee liqueur.
And 26% proof.
Very good. Very good. Now you get drunk on this and the hangover will last literally the rest of your life. You won't be able to smell Kahlua again without vomiting.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with it. Now, Roger, what is it when you get blotches appearing on your skin? Mm. Yeah, uncontrollable shaking. And out of the periphery of your vision, you see rats and snakes.
Well, I think that's sort of any and all of these drinks, but taken in massive excess.
Right, I thought so. Is there any cure for this sort of thing?
Not really, just drinking less, I suppose.
I'm afraid that's not possible. Right, the producer's saying that we don't want to be seen to be promoting alcohol and everything. So, have you got a word of caution? Word of caution for anyone who's thinking of going out tonight and getting ripped to the tits?
No, I haven't, Mike.
Right, that's fantastic. Yeah. You're brilliant, you are.
Oh,
brilliant. It was all about hangovers and... Sue! Yes, great.
Good to see you back on form, Mike. Well, one thing all of us associate with drinking is getting your round in. And here to tell us about this strange system of buying drinks is a man who's been one of the BBC's most respected foreign correspondents for the last 30 years, Chris Murray. Welcome, Chris.
Hello.
Now, Chris, you've been practically everywhere in the world. Is getting a round in a peculiarly British thing?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. A lot of foreigners, particularly Americans, seem unable to grasp the custom. In fact, I've never met an American who's bought me a drink.
Now, you're being a bit naughty there, aren't you, Chris?
Well,
because this is a bit of a hobby horse of yours, isn't it?
No, well, not at all. No, over the last 30 years, as I say, in hotels around the world, I've been surrounded by Americans, and it's a fact They just don't get their round in.
Well, we thought you might say this, so we've invited along someone to fight the American corner. Ah. So let's bring in controversial American travel writer Will Bryant. Hello, Will.
Hi, Sue.
So, Will, what do you think about this? Someone saying your nation doesn't get its round in?
Well, I think we bought Britain rather a large round during World War II. But that's beside the point. This whole getting a round in thing, it's so British. I mean, it's kind of quaint, but it just doesn't work. I suppose someone leaves the bar without getting their round in. That's not fair.
It's just friendlier.
You say friendlier, I say you're a sucker.
Ooh, yeah, well, what do you say to that, Chris?
Well, I say this. I say that the round system is just one example of the fact that American society is selfish and ours isn't. You know, like the way in America you pay individually for medical care.
Sure.
Whereas we all contribute to a national health service. It's just a much better way of doing things.
Oh, yes, it's so nice. It's so British. I'll have a cup of tea, please. It's so nice.
Oh, Will.
No, but I didn't actually use the word nice, and doing a silly accent is just irrelevant at this juncture, quite frankly. It's really just like me saying, in our country, we don't very often go into a McDonald's and kill everyone with a semi-automatic weapon. Or turn it on ourselves or something, isn't it, really?
Will. In America, isn't it very trendy now to drink in hotel lobbies?
I'm sorry, Sue. I just want to hear this man's answer to why Americans never buy a round of drinks.
Okay.
Come on.
Well,
then.
I guess Americans just aren't comfortable with the idea of buying someone a drink who's not going to buy you a drink back.
So it's a monetary thing.
Well, yeah.
So it's selfishness, pure and simple.
Well, no.
Come on. All right. When was the last time, Will Bryant, that you personally put your hand in your pocket and bought someone a drink?
Sue, I thought this was supposed to be a light-hearted thing about British customs.
Do the bad weather stuff.
Sure. Well, what's with this rain, huh? Wimbledon. Yeah. Rain. I call it Rainbledon.
That doesn't even make sense. And you haven't When was the last
Listen,
time...
Listen, you limey piece of trash, if it wasn't for guys like me, you'd all be speaking German right now. Why don't you and I step outside?
Well, now, why please. Step outside? Come on, we'll settle this now.
Sure thing.
Settle it now.
Oh, my God, Mike, what have you done?
I'm stopping the fight. Oh, God, no, I've done it again. I'm Mike.
And I'm Sue.
And this has been Life, Death and Sex.
With Mike and Sue.
Life, Death and Sex with Mike and Sue was written by George Jeffrey and Bert Tyler Moore from a format by Bill Dare. It starred Robert Duncan and Jan Ravens with Roger Blake, Alistair McGowan and Ronnie Ancona. Music was by Mark Burton and the producer was Alan Evans.